act of hospitality and service when you came into a home was to wash your guests' feet, and it was always given to the lowest of the servants. Now, for some reason, no one had done this, probably because we know they've been jockeying for position, haven't the disciples? Remember once they were arguing who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? So this has been going on, so I'm not going to humble myself by washing your guys' feet. Yes?
Jack, when you were over there, did you see a lot of people still wearing sandals?
No, not really, but yes, you do. But not a lot. You see it more in Africa and other places like that. You see it a lot. And of course, you see it in Hawaii too. They wear a lot of sandals there, but their feet aren't dirty. But it's just that's what they wore. So interesting question. So we see that, and he gets to Peter then. And let me ask another thing. Today culture, if someone washed your feet, is that kind of an awkward thing for us? Yeah, because we just don't deal with people's feet and everything. So, but it'd be more commonplace for them, wouldn't it? Because that's just a normal process of life. Just like when you take someone's coat, you allow them to freshen up or whatever, or you give them a glass of water, they would just do this normally. But it's awkward when you have the greater doing it to the lesser. Yes?
Not only out of the respect, but it was more convenient as well, and it was refreshing to them.
Very refreshing. Yeah. Yeah, because all of us like our feet soaked, you know, when their heart are tired and hot in cold water. Doesn't that feel good? Just refreshing. It is. So this is an awkward thing that's happening. And then finally, he gets to Peter. Now, we know Peter, all right? Well, that's right. He's not going to do it. Peter is what we call the impetuous one. But he's got that type A personality that he's always the first to act, always the first seems to speak. And he's watching this, and when it gets to him, he's just going, no, we're not going to have any of this. Now, we'll see that in verse 5, verse 6. He came to Simon Peter and said, Lord, do you wash my feet? And what does your Bible say? Anything different? Now, when we look at some other texts, he actually is going to forbid it. He's saying, no, I don't want you to. And that's where Jesus is going to come back and say, I went too far. Sorry. I'm sorry? Okay. Lord, do you wash my feet? And I'm sorry? Okay. Jesus' answer said to him, what I do to you now, you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter. And so, when we look at this, here's the next verse coming up. Peter said to him, never shall you wash my feet. Now, why does he say that?
He doesn't feel like he deserves somebody greater than him to wash his feet.
All right, so is this, someone said worthy, right? Is this a humble statement at its base?
Yes.
Yes. You know, not you. You know, we should be washing your feet. Is that true? But the problem is what? Nobody's done that, okay? And Jesus got another ulterior motive. He's going to try to teach them a lesson. He will. But Peter says, no, I'm not going to have you do it. Now, it's okay to be humble, but sometimes there's an extreme humility that is not worthy, okay? Someone else had their hand up over here. Yes?
He's also stating that I will never be higher than you.
Okay. Okay, all right. So Jesus comes back and he makes an interesting statement. He says, if you don't permit it, if you don't let me wash you, you'll have no part with me. Now, what is he saying there? No relationship? What?
Okay, now wash it all over.
Well, that's his response. Does Peter really get it? No, because he says, well, if that's the case, wash my whole body, right? So what is Jesus saying? Yes.
He's saying, okay, I get it.
Okay.
If you're not going to do that, I'll wash my feet and my head.
Okay.
My feet.
Jesus is saying that Peter doesn't understand.
He understood what was taking place.
All right. When Jesus says, if you don't let me, you don't have any part with me, you haven't learned the lesson I'm trying to teach. You're not getting who I am. You don't get it. And so you're going to have to allow this, And is it going to be humbling? Is it going to be awkward? Yes, but it's not. It's only through that process you're going to learn the lesson I'm trying to teach you, right? That if I'm not above helping you and serving you, then you should not be too good to help someone else. That's going to be the bottom line lesson. And yeah.
And in their day, they had all the gods of the Greek culture and the Roman culture, and they appeased their gods, just the opposite. So this is really quite a learning and startling lesson for them, that a God would do this for you.
Exactly. And Peter's already confessed, you are the Christ. You're the Son of God. You're divine. You know, I know who you are. You've walked on water. I'm not going to let you wash my feet. So, yes.
I think also in that statement, Jack, Jesus is saying that this is the dependence that you need to have upon me. You have to depend upon me. I'm showing you that I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to do this for you. I will always be there for you, but you got to let me do this part. And I think they're going to see that later, that they have to totally depend, and Jesus is there to take care
of them. Okay. All right. Well, so this statement then, he says, well, then wash all of me. Jesus comes back and look what he says. He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet. So what do we know about the rest of his body already? He's clean. They bathed or did something before this feast or this meal, which was appropriate. But it's completely clean, all right? And you are clean, but not all of you. Now, what's that going to be a reference to? Because Judas, we've already seen that Satan put it in the heart to Judas, one of the 12, to actually betray him. And it says in the text, he knew the one who was betraying him. For this reason, he said, not all of you are clean. Now, who's writing this? John. Did he know it when it happened and played out in front of him?
No,
he's writing it after the fact, because now he understands, okay, that Judas is not clean. So Jesus is switching from dirty feet to an unclean heart, all right? He's switching real quickly.
When Aaron entered into the tabernacle and the priest, they had to wash their hands and their feet. They did that. It was demanded that they do it. If they didn't do it, they could be killed for it. This is going to be the institution of the Lord's Supper and these things that are happening too that happened prior to that.
Yeah.
But with that, he's showing the significance by doing this. This is very, very important.
Right, and yet we don't want to get too caught up in being cleaned spiritually, because that's really not what he's addressing here.
Right.
But you're right about the priest there. And what he's all trying to do is teach us a lesson on service. That's the only point. But he's making a little sidebar statement along the way here, which is interesting for us. And so when he washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined the table again, he said to them, do you know what I just did for you? Now, this is one of those duh questions, all right? Is this a trick question? You what? Just washed our feet. Now, is that what Jesus did?
No.
Yeah, I washed your feet, but there's something more significant. He says, you call me teacher and Lord. Then he says, that's right. That's who I am. I'm your rabbi. You've been following me. I called you to become fishers of men. And these 3 years, you know, I've been teaching you and instructing you. And you're here to serve and follow me. He says, that's the truth. But here's what happened, he says. But then the Lord and the teacher, I washed your feet. So you ought to wash one another's feet. I gave you an example. See, that's what he's done. He didn't wash their feet. He gave them a lesson. He taught them a lesson. That you should do as I did to you. So truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is the one who is sent greater than the one who sent him. And we'll talk about that. So a couple words here. The word ought, when you look at and define it, it's a moral, being morally obligated. It's legally required, like to pay a debt. It's a strong word. It's like, well, do you think we ought to go to the store? Nah, I don't know. No, when you use the word ought here, this word, it means you're bound to it. It's the only thing to do that is a proper. So you're meeting an obligation. So why would Jesus use the word ought in this scenario with such strong language there?
To encourage them.
Yeah, it's a little more than encourage, though, but what's the basis? What's the debt? Yes?
He's trying to put to rest the whole struggle with who's the greatest.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. The point is, it doesn't matter. You serve each other and get on about the business.
Okay. She said, if you didn't hear it, putting to rest this argument, who's the greatest? Because here is the greatest serving the least. And if God can do that, who is beneath us that is not worthy of being served? No one. No one's unworthy, because it's not about who's worthy or not. It's about what kind of person you are. And if our God has got that kind of character that he would serve us, out of gratitude, what are we going to turn and do to others? That's where the moral obligation comes. If someone of greater status than you does this for you, and yet you withhold that from someone else, that just shows this ungratefulness. All right? Yeah, go ahead. Right.
So why are you fighting among yourselves who's the greatest? It's me.
That's right. And the other thing I want to suggest to you, it shows the intrinsic value of everyone on this earth, especially those that follow Christ. If God would wash my feet, and then that shows an extreme value that I have in his eyes, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That he would humble himself enough to wash my feet and, of course, later die for me. That just raises our status in our own eyes. But God already knew that. He loved us so much, he was willing to do that. And so what we have to do is raise the status of everyone around us to the equal position, because they're extremely valuable in God's eyes, so they must be in my eyes as well. Even though they come in different shapes, different status, different colors and all that, they're all of equal value, and so I should be willing and want to enthusiastically serve one another, all right? Not of, okay, all right? Does that make sense? This is the hallmark of what Christianity is all about, and it's what sets us apart, it's supposed to, from other, you know, religions, okay? So, nor is the one who sent greater than the one who sent him. So, the example is a figure of, it's in other words, I've illustrated. Jesus is good. He didn't just tell you what to do. He showed us. So you can't miss the point. And he painted a picture by his own actions, and even though it was uncomfortable. Now, when he says a slave is not greater than his master, nor is the one who sent greater than the one who sent him, that's going to be allusion to what's coming up next, because Jesus was sent by who? The Father. And what's Jesus going to do? Send out the 12. So the one sending is greater than the one being sent, because the one sent is a servant to bid the will of the master. But Jesus says, he's acknowledged, I am greater, but I'm still the one serving. So if it's not beneath me, then it should not be beneath you. Now I love verse 17. If you know these things, first thing you got to what? You got to learn this lesson. And frankly, a lot of Christians haven't learned this lesson, because service is beneath them. They want to be served. They want to get rather than give. But if you know these things, right? So second thing, if you know them, what? You're blessed. Why? If you do them. That's the big thing. It's not about knowledge. If you want to be blessed by God and you want to be happy yourself, then practice what you know to be true. Yes.
Just so for myself, so I understand it, because we don't wash feet today, but that is an example for us to be of service to other Christians.
All right, I'm glad you raised that question, because the next slide is going to answer it. All right. Are we supposed to have foot washing services? Okay, Wayne?
I just real quickly, that I looked up the word ought, and I see that it says it's a moral obligation.
Uh-huh. Right. Moral. That's right. Because of when you value people for what they do, you're going to serve them. That's right. Yes. And yes. And I'm glad you brought that out, because he just washed also the one who is going to betray him. Now, Jesus is going to teach another place to love your enemies. The way you win your enemy is by loving them, not being evil to them. And did Jesus love Judas to the end? Now, that's what this chapter started. He said he loved his disciples to the end, to the fullest. And here, how hard it would have been to wash Judas's feet when he knows those feet in a little while are going to carry this man to go betray Jesus. Wouldn't that have been hard, difficult? But Jesus had that within him. Because it's not about me, it's about serving you. So that's a good point. By the way, the one who is sent, this word here is the word apostolos, which we get the word what? Apostle. And the word apostle is just one sent forth, okay? And we'll come back to that later. Going back to Marvin's question or comment, they have this, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Did you want to give it a try? It's Latin, huh? Thank you. Peta means what? We know that, foot. This is a service that is conducted in many groups to honor what Jesus said. It's a foot washing service. That's what it is, Petalavian. It's a foot washing service. And they do it. And now notice how they're doing it. Who's doing it? And notice the nice basins, gold. Have they missed something that Jesus is teaching? A ritual, you said. Was Jesus saying, wash people's feet? No, the lesson was what?
Serve
people. If their feet are dirty, what? Wash them. But if they're not dirty, should you wash them just to have a service and say, we wash people's feet? No, you missed the whole point of the lesson. And so we have this. Bruce writes, the studied formality of the Petalovian on Maundy Thursday, that's when they actually carry this out. It's called Maundy Thursday, when bishops, abbots, and sovereigns have traditionally washed the feet of paupers, may commemorate our Lord's action, but in the nature of the case, it can scarcely fulfill its spirit. What's he saying?
They missed the point.
They missed the point. Thank you. Why couldn't you just say that? They just missed the point. Well, yeah, they're carrying out actions, but do they miss the spirit of what Jesus is trying to teach? Service. I know, the whole thing. But isn't that what man does to religion? And that's why I say there's a difference between religion and Christianity. Christianity is something that's transformative. When you follow Christ, you become like him. And you become like him in his areas of service. Because the one thing Jesus was, he was a giver, not a taker. He gave some more. All right, so that's just interesting. All right, have anyone heard of groups that do that today?
Yeah,
there are groups in this area that they'll have foot washing services. And they think they're honoring Christ. Now, could you have one just to teach the lesson to people all over again? I guess, but that's not the purpose itself. You know, teach it by just serving, all right? Okay. Anything else on that one? So,
you talked about Judas, that he loved Judas as he was washing his feet. And the thing that we need to keep in mind, too, is the big picture. He was doing it because he knew what Judas was going to do had to be done.
Right.
And he knew that God's will was going to be fulfilled. And so if we love people and love our enemies and look at God, the big picture, we always know that God's will is going to be fulfilled.
Exactly.
We need to keep in our hearts is that when enemies are ugly to us or whatever.
That's a good point.
He
saw the big picture, so it allows you to overcome the moment. And that's true. When you know God's going to take care of you, even though we have evil sometimes we have to deal with, look past it, and God's going to take care of things. So he's going to get back to Judas here in chapter 13 and verse 18 now. He says, I do not speak all of you, because I know the ones I have chosen, but it is the scripture that the scripture might be fulfilled. He who eats my bread has lifted up his heel against me. And from now on, I'm telling you before it comes to pass, so that when it does occur, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say, whoever receives whomever I send receives me, and he who receives him who receives him who sent me. And when he said this, he became troubled in spirit and testified and said, truly I say to you that one of you will betray me. So he's going from general language to now very specific. One of you is going to betray me. So the disciples began looking at one another at a loss. Can you imagine dismay? To know which one of them he was speaking. There's a traitor amongst them. Now, that's just shocking words because you're just going, like, who is it? Because the Lord couldn't be wrong or misspoken. And the disciples, of course, began looking. Verse 23, there was one reclined on Jesus' breast, one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. So Simon Peter, therefore, gestured to him. Who's the him? The one leaning on his breast, and we're going to identify him, and said to him, tell us who it is that he's speaking. So he, who's the he? Okay, if it's John, that's right. Leaning back thus on Jesus' breast, said to him, Lord, who is it? So Jesus therefore answered, that is the one whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to him. So when he dipped the morsel, he took and gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. And after the morsel, Satan then entered into him. And Jesus therefore said to him, what do, quickly. Now no one of those reclining at the table knew for what purpose he had said this. Now let's break this down because I want you to see the full picture here. So first of all, Jesus quotes Psalms 41 verse 9, where even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. When they read that in the synagogues on Sabbath for many years, did they understand that was talking about Judas who was going to betray the Messiah?
No.
Now, how did Jesus know? Well, of course, he's the one that spoke it, you know, through the prophets. And now he's saying, here's what's going to happen. One of my own friends is going to betray me. Does that hurt when he calls him your friend? And yet he's going to stab you in the back. All right, so we see that. He says, I'm telling you now, so when it happens afterwards, you go, oh, it wasn't just an accident. This is all part of, as you were saying, God's plan. And God's plan is going to be fulfilled and actually speaks to, you know, Jesus, you know, being who he said he was. So here is an interesting statement. It's almost a sidebar, but I'm just going to deal with it, then skip past it. He says, whoever receives the one that I send receives me. And if you receive me, you receive the one who sent me. Now, we know God sent Jesus, and Jesus is going to send out the 12 who are going to do what? We're going to preach the gospel. That's right. So Jesus says, if you receive them, we already learned in John 12, the way you receive Jesus is by receiving and doing the things that he speaks. So if you reject the word which the 12 sent or speak, who are you rejecting?
Jesus.
And if you reject Jesus, who are you rejecting? The Father. But he's putting in the positive. If you receive by accepting what they say is true and then obeying or following through on them, you're actually receiving Jesus and you're actually receiving the Father. All right? This shows the authority in which the apostles are going to speak. Jesus is given all authority. They're delegated authority to speak on behalf of Christ, and whatever they say is bound in heaven. We're going to get to that in chapter 20. So that's why I wanted to start here, because we're going to come back to this theme, that the authority that he's passing down onto them. But notice the receive, 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 receive. Four of them, right? How do you receive Christ? You do what he says. You believe what he says, and you then do it. That's what it all starts with. So let's go now back to the betrayal, all right? So he says, he's troubled. And we already saw this word earlier in chapter 12. And in chapter 14, he's going to use it again to the disciples when he says, I'm leaving. He says, don't be troubled. This is this agitation. It's being stirred up and troubled. Can you imagine a lot of people facing the hurricane or troubled now? Oh, yeah. They don't know what they're doing, you're going to see. So it's to get up, stirred up inside. Jesus is troubled now again, showing again his humanity. That he wasn't just some robot blazing through life on the earth without any emotions. When he said this, he became troubled in spirit and said, well, one of you is going to betray me. Man, that's just got to hurt. And of course, that put them into this tailspin. Who is it going to be? And that's where we see in Matthew 26, they, the disciples, when they heard this, became exceedingly sorrowful. Now, it's one thing to be sorrowful, but what's exceedingly sorrowful? You see how much this is upsetting them. That someone that has been walking with them, their friend, for the last 3 years, is now a traitor. He's going to betray Christ. So they all begin to ask Jesus, Lord, is it I? Now, that's very curious. Why would they ask him?
Because he has all knowledge.
No, that's not what I'm asking. Why are they asking him?
Am I the one afraid?
Well, why would they not know? Okay, someone comes to the back door. Hey, someone robbed $1,000 out of the back room.
Well, we would know that we didn't do that.
You would know, wouldn't you? I mean, Bruce wouldn't go up and say, was it me? Well, maybe Bruce would. Yeah, it was Bruce. Right? Why are they asking, is it I, Lord? Go back and answer. Go ahead.
Because they're worried about their own spiritual strength. Are they going to give in? Are they going to stay strong?
That's the only answer I can understand. Because they know they have failed him in the past. They know that, they just know. Is it going to be me is really what the question. Am I going to be the one? And so they're very concerned because they're acutely aware of their own weaknesses inside. That's not beyond me to do that. Now that's profound because Peter's going to come back at the end of the chapter and say, ha, not me. And Jesus, oh, Peter, you will after the cock crows. Yes.
They had just had to swallow this whole lesson on humility.
Right.
So they're all kind of questioning, well,
right? That's a good point. Yeah, because I failed to serve, and now maybe, sorry, someone else had their hand.
Well, again, Jesus knows the hearts of all men.
Yes.
And so when they're saying, Lord, is it I? So they're looking at themselves and where they failed in the past.
Yeah.
And but also, Jesus is going to know who that person is. And is it I, Lord?
Yeah.
Am I the one that's going to fall and do this?
Well, of course he knows who's going to be, but it's just, I think, it's, again, you're right, but it's just curious they would ask because they are troubled themselves. Like, you would think you would know that if you would or not is all I'm trying to pull out here. All right, so here is this curious thing. There was reclining in Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. So this is one of four references that we find in the book of John. And the best understanding, each one refers to John himself. It's how he identifies himself. And here they are. The first one is right here in John 13, 23, so I don't have to read it. And then the next one's in John 19, when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby. That's the third time. And the second time, the third time is in chapter 20 at the resurrection. She ran and came to Simon Peter and the other disciple whom Jesus loved. And so they've taken our master out of the tomb. The last one is in the last chapter. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. Everyone has to do something with his death and resurrection, the context, which is interesting. One, he's talking about his betrayal. The next one's at the crucifixion. The next is at the tomb. And here's the resurrection, the appearance. Each time, it's in that kind of context. But we would understand this is John, the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, that raises the question, is it okay to have your favorite?
Yes.
Yes, huh?
You always have closer friends than others.
You always have closer friends than others. Is that true? Yeah. Does that mean you do not serve the ones that are the least favorite? No, it has nothing to do with value, has nothing to do with how you're going to treat people. It just means sometimes for some people, you just get along and connect better, right? Yeah, and it's natural, and it's just amazing. Jesus had one in whom he loved. Well, exactly. We know that. So this means more in, or in a special way, all right? Good question. Is he a little like the one whom Jesus loved? No, I think that that's how he was known. And maybe there's some modesty here. That doesn't even mention himself. But it's a good question. And anything beyond this, we're going to be speculating. I don't know. But here's what I want you to see. Remember we saw last week, we said they sat in a U. Did I talk about that?
Yeah.
They did not sit at a table with, you know, four-legged chairs. That's Western culture. But they had a table that was probably really, really low to the ground. And they would actually be laying on pillows, and some said on their side or even on their bellies. And so the head of the ewe was for the master, right? The honored person. And then people would be sitting or laying stretched out like this. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The person on the right was the honored position. So that's the right of the master. That's far left, right? That was the honored place. And then this would be the next one right here on his left. Now, it's interesting. Who does Simon ask to ask Jesus who it is? He asks John. So the best understanding, this person right here is John. Because he's leaning on Jesus' breast. I mean, they're that close. So he leans over and he's just next to him. Lord, who is it? That tells us about Peter. Where's Peter then? He is probably right there or even there. He's not next to Jesus in the favored position. Now, what's also interesting, when John asked him, who is it, Lord? He said, it's the one who I'm going to give the morsel to. That's probably Judas on his other side. The one who's going to betray him has an honored position. If that's the case, that's, to me, stunning. The implications and just the heart of Judas. So let's look at it with that being said and try to make some sense of this. So there was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. That'd be John. So Simon Peter gestured to him, said, tell us whom it is speaking. Because he couldn't ask Jesus himself, but John could. So he, leaning back thus on Jesus' bosom, said to him, Lord, who is it? See how it happened? All right? And so the Lord, it's interesting, we find in Matthew 26, Judas was betraying him, answered and said, Rabbi, is it I? And he said to him, you have said it. So he's going to ask the same question. Now, the reason I think there's evidence that he's sitting there is because no one else knows why Judas is going to get up. It says that in the text. We'll read that in a second. So if they didn't know, did they hear this conversation? Because if Judas was in this position, he goes, Lord, is it I? And Jesus said, you've said it. Would they all know? So it must have been just this private conversation. You're like, you're sitting at a dinner table. Don't you have a private sometime with the person next to you? And you say, man, this chicken's really good, right? And it's, you know, right, we do that. So that's what's happening here. So we see in verse 25, he asked who it was. So Jesus answered to who? To who? John. And probably nobody else is hearing this conversation. Or else they would know who it is, right? The one whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to him. So he dipped the morsel and he took and gave it to Judas. Here's what Tasker writes. When Jesus offered Judas a special morsel from the common dish, such that it was customary for a host to offer an honored guest, it is a mark of divine love which ever seeks to overcome evil with good. So in other words, when the host offers this food to someone, that shows they're an honored guest. Is Jesus trying to win his heart back and soften him? And that's what he's overcoming evil with his own goodness, but to no avail. So when you look at what's going on here, it heightens the tension, all the acts of Jesus, because if you could see what's happening, and know he's going to betray him. Like, Lord, how could you do that? But he knows what's going to happen.
Well, that explains the impact that it had on Judas.
Yeah.
Until the end of his life.
The shame.
He was that close.
Where he hung himself later. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, yes.
At the same time, Judas is his ticket home.
I'm sorry?
At the same time, Judas is Jesus' ticket home.
Oh. Judas is Jesus' ticket home, okay?
Jesus has been wanting to go home.
And you're actually right in what you're saying, because the next couple text verses are going to say that. So, yeah. It all works according to his plan. Wayne.
Just real quick, gotta remember though, it wasn't just Judas. All 12 betrayed him.
They all denied him, but Judas specifically betrayed him into the hands of the enemy. That's be the difference. Yes, but you're right. Joe? All right. Here it says, after the morsel, Satan had entered to him. We already read that earlier. Satan had entered his heart, and we had that discussion. And just Satan will not, I'll just say this, Satan will not enter your heart unless you let him. It's a choice, because what was Judas already doing? Robbing from the treasury box. All right. So he had an evil heart, and Satan knows that, and he will use that as an opportunity to tempt you to do something else. Because what's he going to betray Jesus for? Money. It's all about money in his eyes. All right? So, yes, he entered his heart. But anytime you do something that's contrary to God's will, who's guiding you? God or Satan?
Satan.
So could I say, when you lie to someone, Satan entered your heart?
Yes.
Not in a overcoming way. He's now taking control of you and you have no choice. But you've given in to his will rather than the Lord's will. So it's not the Lord living in you, it's Satan. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yes.
Joe?
Well, it does, except that if Judas had not done that, we
would have. Well, that's true. This is the amazing foreknowledge of God. He knows what's going to happen before it happens, but he doesn't make you do it. But since he knows what's going to happen before it happens, he uses it to achieve his will. You know what I'm saying? It's not predestined, it's foreknowledge. Like, I know what you're going to do, so you're the weak link here, and so I'm going to use you to glorify my Father. In your sin. That's what's amazing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. Yes.
Esther was told maybe you're put here for this purpose.
She had to choose.
If you don't do it, God will find somebody else.
She had to choose. Right. Someone else had their hand up? Right. Yes.
So according to the conversation you're talking about, it sounds like John
was
the betrayer.
Yeah, he seemed like he would have to know, but later it says none of them knew. So maybe he didn't understand it. I don't know. I can't answer that. But good observation. Yes.
I was going to say, when there's a difference between maybe Satan and demons.
Yes.
Sometimes demons enter into our body.
And did take over.
But when Satan enters our heart.
Yes. Right.
And that whole paradigm continues in everything that we do.
That's right.
The Old Testament is full of those different types.
When you let him in a little, he just pours in. Yeah, good point. All right. So he tells, get up, do what you're going to do quickly. So no one of those reclining table knew for what purpose it said to him. They were thinking, since he had the money box, that he was going to go buy some things for the poor. Sorry, I didn't mean to go through there that fast. Buy things for the feast. He'd give something to the poor. In other words, they didn't know. But as soon as he received the morsel, what did he do? Why did he do it so quickly? Probably because he knew what he was going to do, and Jesus is calling him on it. And maybe out of shame or just, he just got up and did it. And have you ever been in that situation where you knew you're caught and you didn't want to sit there and deny, so you just get up and leave? Yeah, and
I think part of it was Jesus told him specifically to do it.
Yes. That's right.
He was still his disciple all the way to the end.
But even then, he could have repented. Yeah. At the last moment. He could have repented. Chose not to. So, here Jesus is going to flip back to the washing the feet, because he's going to give a new commandment, and we have just enough time.
Can you imagine what was going through the apostles' mind while they waited for him to designate the loser?
Yeah. And they don't know. I know. They're still wondering who it is. It's a lot of tension in the room, to say the least, okay? Now Jesus is going to go on, and we have just enough time to talk about it. When he'd gone out, Jesus said, and this is what Bruce was referring to, now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. And God, if God is glorified in him, God will glorify him in himself and will glorify him immediately. Now, what do we see here? Glorify, 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 glorify. We look at the cross, we look at shame, death, humility, beating, sacrifice. When Jesus is looking what's in motion now, because he can't stop it now, it's all in motion, he sees what? Glory, 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 glory. What a different perspective. Even though he despised the shame, Hebrews chapter 12 says he looked to the joy set before him. He gets to go home and he's accomplishing the will of God, glorifying him by doing what God asked him to do. It's all about perspective. If you see you're glorifying God in this hard task, you're going to find the will, wherewithal to do it. If you're looking at misery and humility and shame and being persecuted, you're going to run, right? It's all about perspective. And that's what he has here. So he says, I'm going to be with you a little while. You're going to seek me. And just like I told the Jews, you're not going to be able to find me. So that's where he's going to give this new commandment. I'm going to save it for next week. But here he says, love one another, right? As I loved you. We're going to explain that. But here I just want to share this with you because there is a group list of Christians on Facebook. This is one time Facebook does a good job. Well, one of maybe some other time. And they're posting ways to help Christians in the Texas area and now in Florida. And here is just some of the postings I want you to see. Here's Jennifer Steger. Don't know her. But Florida evacuees, we have a finished basement with half bath available, showers available upstairs. It's a queen pull-out bed, and we can set up other beds on the floor to accommodate a large family. We've got a crib available. We're pet-friendly. We live on 8 acres. We can board livestock if needed. We live in Tennessee. What are they doing? Inviting evacuees, just move into our house. And the pages are full of people offering this. What are they practicing? Love one another. When you wash their feet? When they're dirty. When you open your home? When people are homeless. Here's another one. Houston area. We have 2 furnished bedrooms available, standby generator that powers the whole home. We have power, AC, I'm going there, you know, dryers. We, for allergy purpose, we have 3 dogs and pigs. In other words, just be careful if you want to come, all right? Here's another one. This is in Alabama. I can take in a large family or what? 2 fully furnished downstairs apartment with kitchen, full bath that is 2,000 square feet. Camper RV with electrical and water hookup that sleeps 4. Pets are okay. Certain areas of the house, small pasture for a horse. Isn't that marvelous? These are Christians on a Facebook page, and you can become part of it, and they're just helping other people. All right. Thank you. We're out of time.